The content here is for informational purposes only, should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security, and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any A16Z fund. For more details, please see a16z.com/disclosures.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the A16Z podcast. I'm Sonal, and today I have with us the Brothers Cranny, and that includes our in-house operating head, Mark Cranny, and who I actually am going to call Cranny because that's what everyone here calls him, and his brother, Todd Cranny, who I'll call Todd on this podcast because that's your name. And Todd, you're a political operator for a very long time. Like, what's your background?
There's only one Cranny in A16Z.
That's exactly right.
I know that, and it's Mark Cranny. I got that. So I've worked on three presidential campaigns. I worked on President Bush's reelection campaign. I worked on both of Governor Romney's presidential campaigns. I worked for Governor Schwarzenegger's reelection campaign, and I also worked for Meg Whitman when she ran for governor of California.
So when you say you worked on campaigns, like there's so many different functions on a campaign. Like, what was your overall role?
Particularly in the political operation, I served as the deputy political director nationally for Mitt's campaign. I ran the Western states for Mitt the first time he ran. And then I also was political director for Meg when she ran for governor. So a lot of the focus for me has been on the political operations side of the campaign, the actual politics of the campaign.
That's great. So those of our listeners who don't know the other Cranny, you bring a ton of expertise on go-to-market strategy. And one of the things that you guys are both telling me from very different vantage points is that there's a lot of similarities between business and politics, which I think people can buy on the surface. But what argument would you make?
I think, you know, if from an entrepreneur standpoint, your go-to-market executive or even a CEO, putting the politics aside, if you look at what's going on in these big campaigns, particularly now, and compare it to what you're doing on a go-to-market side, there's little things you can learn because it is kind of the Super Bowl of, you know, a big go-to-market. If you think of how these started off as primaries and they had to go through this whole process, now we're down to the final two. It's a lot like enterprise sales for campaigns selling to, you know, large enterprises. You got to get a lot of different people on board in these complex selling situations, and essentially get them to vote for you, on the tech sell side.
So I hear the similarities that there's some lessons to be learned from campaigns or just thinking about them as the same type of thing, like getting to a vote, getting to someone to pick you essentially, or you pick your product. But break it down for me at the very basic level. What's the product here?
The product is the candidate. I mean, in politics, the product really is the candidate. Now, the advantage you have in business is that the product is innate and you can improve it and control it completely. In politics, you can't control the candidate because it's a person, obviously, and they've got to learn and grow and they're going to have their moments. But the product is the candidate, and that's what you have to build off of. And then you essentially have an organization, and it's a business organization just like you have on the business side. I mean, you have a strategy team that's setting up in terms of what is the overall strategy of the campaign, the resource allocation decisions have to be made. There's a political department, which is essentially the marketing department.
Uh-huh.
You know, not exactly one-to-one, but it's very much similarities. You have a communications team that is doing all the PR and the outreach, dealing with reporters and helping build the narrative. You have an administrative team that's taking care of all the legal and all of the, you know, compliance issues and everything under the sun and how the actual organization runs. And
don't forget the finance team.
Well,
right? Raising the money.
Yeah,
right?
Raising the money of a finance team. I mean, it's a big business, but political campaign really is the ultimate startup. You come in with nothing and you have to basically build a organization and you got to do it in 0 to 60 and in a hurry. And it's kind of the ultimate startup and then shut down.
So a political campaign, unlike a startup, when it shuts down, it ends. I mean, startups actually shut down too.
They do. Yeah. On a campaign, you have a finite period. Meg always would ask me, what's the biggest difference between business and politics? And I'd just say the difference between business and politics is that you can, in business, be competing with somebody in a quarter and come in second and still make a lot of money and still be in business for the next quarter. And politics, you come in second and you're done. It's over.
So you know,
there are no points for second place. You know, the other thing that is a similarity between business and politics is, in particular on the sales side, is it's relationship heavy. I mean, it requires a lot of building relationships, interpersonal skills, dealing with others, conflict resolution, solutions, less about innate objects, more about dealing with people. If you're dealing with the technology and the engineers are fixing the problems and working out the bugs and they can improve the product from feedback you're getting and really improve it dramatically, well, you know, we're helping the candidate who is the product, right? And we're giving advice, but they're a human being. They have their strengths and they have their weaknesses. They're not a technology.
Well, I would argue that even technologies have strengths and weaknesses. And Cranny,
that's a good point.
Mark Cranny, I've heard you argue that sales and go-to-market is all about relationship building.
Well, I mean, you know, kind of to that point, in a startup is as well as in a political campaign, it is in the control of the go-to-market team with what should that buying criteria be. You have the ability of helping a customer and or a voter show them what that criteria should be and how they should go about thinking about that. If you watch what's going on right now, both sides have two completely distinct views. I mean, and there's X amount percent on either side already set in their ways, but that middle piece is the one that's going to sway you one way or the other. In a lot of cases, that happens, you know, in go-to-market, particularly in highly competitive situations where you've got, you know, a bunch of people going at it. And, you know, and later on in the process, it might come down to the two finalists. You know, what is that criteria? Have you got the votes?
When I've heard you talk about criteria, it's essentially saying, don't just look at what's right in front of you. There's a whole context that you're creating for this product and this engagement. How does that play out in the election example? I mean, we're not actually saying, hey, you're telling the voters what to think. Obviously.
Well, but you kind of are. I mean, the reality is you are responding to what the voters want. You know, sometimes voters don't know what they want, you know, just like buyers don't know what they want. You got to tell them what they want, and you can tell them what they want. You can actually create a new paradigm with them.
Even for voters who seem like they know exactly what their views are on certain issues.
I mean, there's definitely, you know, sets. Mm-hmm. I mean, on either side of the spectrum that are set in their ways and they're not persuadable. I mean, we talk a lot about persuadables. Who are the persuadable that you could actually set the criteria with? I mean, he talks about criteria. What we would describe it in the political world is, what is the narrative that you want to tell? What is the... There's nothing more important in a political campaign than the message that you want to deliver. What's the story you want to tell?
It's exactly the same terminology
from
a marketing standpoint. And there's different levels of that story. If you're going after a large technology company, you know, there's all the users that might, you know, use your product. There's kind of mid-level management. And then there's executives. Everybody has a different set of buying criteria for a user than it is for an executive. So if I'm a seller of technology, I need to understand what all these three personas, the users, managers, and the CXOs, what they're going to care about. From a political standpoint, they need to know that too.
And that's what
we're
doing.
And you need to hit it from multiple different angles. And the amount of data on the voters that a political campaign comes up with is enormous. And how they go to market to, you know, either get out the vote and or get them to vote for them is enormous. All the way down to putting boots on the ground from a Salesforce standpoint.
We use an enormous amount of data to help us figure out what the message needs to be. How do you craft the narrative off that message? And then what are the channels of delivery that you use to get that message out? I mean, there's obviously the advertising route and the community, you know, digital route, et cetera. But then there's the on the ground field operations, field staff working with volunteers who are sharing that through their channels. There's endorsements, validators of products that are telling the same story and the same message.
Reference selling, right?
I mean,
the other things he just went through is on the marketing side is, you know, the advertising versus digital. What is my ROI on the political side? Well, that's the same thing a CMO has to answer from a technology sell standpoint as well. Am I better off doing this type of campaign or program? It's fascinating to watch a presidential campaign. How do you unseat an incumbent? It's hard to unseat an incumbent, and there's a whole different set of strategies and tactics to do that versus starting from a level playing field.
So what are some of the differences when you don't have two fresh new startup candidates or products and you have, like, say, a David versus Goliath type of situation? What some of the differences, I mean, both politically and in business?
I've been on both sides of this. I mean, I was on the incumbent side with President Bush, and I was on the other side of this with Governor Romney. The parallels between 2004 and 2012 are pretty stark. I mean, it is a huge advantage to be the incumbent. The president has a ton of money and has been building up organization for 4 years, has been road testing that organization in a smart way. One of the biggest criticisms, for example, of the 12 race of Mitt is digital and the investment in infrastructure. Well, the problem is we didn't have the money to invest in infrastructure in both field and on the data side because we were broke, you know, and we had 4 months over the summer to try to redo all that sort of stuff, to build out a full field program, to invest in data and technology. Well, 4 months when the president and his team had been spending 4 years, in fact, eight years running for president. And they'd done a great job and they used that to their advantage. Data and technology and field operations mattered. The Obama campaign had plenty of lead time to build that organization out, to road test it and try different things. And one of the things they did really smartly was they learned about this whole concept of virtual precincts. And generally, precincts are neighborhoods, right? You've organized, you have one person in the neighborhood, they're friends with everybody.
And by the way, in the business world, the equivalent would be like territories.
I would categorize it in our world as, you know, real granular segmentation and targeting. And actually, you probably call it the same thing in your world, I would assume.
But, yeah.
And if you look at the political side of the shop, I mean, you get down to it, there's, you know, a handful of states that really matter. If I'm a startup, or, you know, trying to take on the incumbent, I'm starting behind. They have account control. There's probably technologies and legacy in place, like in a political campaign. So I need to go after not the states that matter, but I need to go out the, you know, do my segmentation and targeting type exercises to go where I can have an impact quickest.
Right.
If I want a chance to win and get the toehold and then build from there.
So sort of a beachhead strategy in that context.
You know, to go spend a lot of money if I'm not in a incumbent situation on states that don't matter and or accounts that are going to not, you know, they're not going to be the early adopters.
Move your, right.
I think to translate that even more is it when you're not the incumbent, you have very little room for error. And you have very much a much more difficult resource allocation decision to make. You got to really know what's the 20% that's going to get you 80% of the way there. If you mess that up as an incumbent, you got a bigger leeway that you can probably deal with. And you can, again, road test and learn and fix it. If you're a challenger in the situation you're in, you just don't have that room.
Right. You don't have the resources or even the reputation. You have nothing.
The smart strategy that the Obama team figured out was the influencer model. Instead of just picking one person in the neighborhood, they started figuring out through data mining and email.
Social.
And social, exactly. There's certain people who don't pay attention, don't really care, but they'll pay attention to the expert on politics in their neighborhood. But what does your neighborhood really look like nowadays? Well, your neighborhood is could be nationwide. I've lived in, I don't know, 15 different places. I mean, I got friends all over the place. I don't necessarily have a neighborhood.
Your neighborhood could be your Facebook
friends.
And in fact,
my neighborhood right now that I live in, I'm hardly ever there. I don't even barely know my neighbors. There are certain people in those virtual neighborhoods that are influencers in politics. The Obama campaign did a nice job of identifying those kind of people who could then spread the word out and organize. That's an important part of sales, I think.
Well, it's a huge, you've got, you know, the coach, you know, what's the difference between a coach and a champion? And, you know, a champion's actually going to go advocate on your behalf without you there. Or in the marketing world on the tech side, the influencers are very similar.
And the point is they took business practices and applied it to politics. We're in basically the same business, but it's just different for different purposes. But look, you have to be careful with the comparisons. I mean, every campaign is different. And,
of course.
And President Obama was more of a movement candidate than some others are.
Right.
Everyone gets in love on politics on the digital and on the grassroots side, but you really have to have the right kind of candidate as well.
That makes a lot of sense.
You still need to apply the same organizational principles or you lose it. If movement candidates can combine organization, like the principles we're talking about here, go-to-market strategies, basically, they can be pretty devastating in a successful way. But what is the movement? The movement's the message. So if you don't get the message right and you don't have the narrative right, it doesn't matter after that. Okay. I would much rather have message and movement and take my chances on organization, although I want both because you can't win without both, really.
There's actually a good analogy on the movement, what I would say the bottoms up type movement, which we see a lot in our world. A good example is in the DevOps world and open source world where the movement might start grassroots wise.
You mean like a viral app or?
Well, it could be viral app. It could be, you know, movement from GitHub users,
right,
and or a Slack. And then you've got to put your go-to-market team and strategy in place to move up market in size of companies as well as up into the executives to go institutionalize that across the whole company. That's a good example of, you know, watching what happens on the political side as well. I mean, just having a movement where I've got a bunch of rowdy fans, if you can't go put a strategy, a team in place to capitalize on that, it doesn't mean you're going to win, right?
Absolutely. It's really crucial that you have to be able to capture that energy and excitement and channel it or it just dissipates and you lose it. A lot of times you have one but not the other.
And you need both.
And you need both. I mean, you know, and if you get in an environment where you don't have the movement and you're battling between two candidates that are both just traditional, then yeah, you want the organization because the organization can muscle the thing through and get
they
you
could
across
be the finish. You know, the extra few points to
we kind of
the top.
You know, field operation to us is paid field staff that are organizing volunteers. The grassroots organization, they could be worth 2 to 4 points in a close election race if it's done well. That was basically, unfortunately, the difference between us and President Obama. I mean, he beat me by 3.5 points. It was him being able to squeeze out on his field operation. And what they did was they maximized the technology and the digital to get there. And that was the key.
Well, Cranny, for the sales and the go-to-market operation, what's the difference between the field and the inside? And do you have the equivalent in political campaigns?
Yeah, I think it's very...
Yeah, no, it's very similar.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let Todd describe his side, but say we've got a bottoms up kind of viral thing going on, and it could be both on the digital side, customer facing or B2C, or on the enterprise side. You can have that, you know, that beachhead established, but if you're just spending all your time going to establish another beachhead at another company, you're at risk of getting pushed out by the incumbent. And or somebody that's got that organizational control, and that's going to be the incumbent, or another startup that actually builds out that next layer to move up market in either size of company and or up market inside the big company that are penetrated in.
But my point, though, is, I mean, you can have the best product in the world, you can have the best candidate in the world, you can have the best story in the world, but if you can't tell it correctly and you can't tell it to where it's relevant to the parties that are interested, you're screwed.
I have that conversation over and over again in with working with a lot of startups where they have a piece of the message right for a particular audience. Typically, it's the users, but they haven't thought about what different level of that message is going to be required as they move up to managers, VPs, the CXOs, the CEOs, or the VPs.
You have to know your audience.
Right. And there's multiple audiences, multiple layers of organization, process, and messaging that needs to be in place to go grow a technology company. If you don't think about that thing, those things, the incumbent and or another startup is going to have an angle to come in and stunt your growth.
How do you guys know in both of your spheres that the message is working? Like, is this just, do you just not get traction if it doesn't work? I mean, do you just keep redoing it?
You look at the data, you look at the market research, basically. We do polling and focus groups, and that pretty much gives us a chance to really vet out and know kind of what works and what doesn't work. I think one of the worst things people do, and it drives me crazy still in this business, is that these people that want to go with their gut. I'm not a big believer about pulling things out of my ass. I may be, you know, really talented and all those sorts of things, but I like to know the answer before I ask the question. And so you know what the message is. You know it worked because you've tested it. But what'll happen is you got to then stay disciplined on that message and not have this sort of thing where, well, I don't think that message works and the polling must be,
And just kind of waffle back and forth.
You just go back and forth. You have no message discipline. I just think it's really crucial. A lot of people will look at things and they'll say, well, my instinct tells me this. Yeah, you have to have instincts when you're selling it in a room and reading a room and knowing how to deliver it and deliver it in the right way. But the message itself, you test it. You know what it is. You know what the data tells you. Now, that's the first part of it. Then you have to have somebody who can deliver it and someone who can deliver it the way it's supposed to be delivered. In other words, deliver it the way you tested it and then deliver it with some confidence and stay on that message and not wander all around. And well, I think my gut tells me this and this and that. Message development and message discipline is crucial.
I think everybody thinks, well, that's just going to come from the candidate only, but that's got to be.
Or the founder CEO.
Right. But that's got to be institutionalized. Everybody's got to be singing from the same sheet of music throughout a sales and marketing organization and or a political campaign, and how you communicate that, how you train and enable people, and are you providing them the content and what that message is, and otherwise you lose, right?
So far we've been talking about politics, candidates as products, and technology as products. How does this all play out given the competitive landscape?
It's the same principle that you have in business, right? You got to know your competition. You got to know their strengths, their weaknesses. You got to know what they're selling, how they're selling it, what they're saying, what they're going to do, because you got to be able to counteract it, obviously, but not just be defensive about it, but how do you go on the offense on this thing? And so there's a huge element, I think, of research and knowing your competition, knowing what they're saying, why they're saying it, what they're doing, so that you know how to counteract that, but also look for opportunities, not just to play defense, but go into offense. And you got to also know, again, that they're out there trashing you. Obviously, in politics, it's pretty obvious. You see it on television all the time. But you also see it at every level, all the way down to the field reps, all the way down to the local county chairman, to blah, blah, blah. There are people out there trashing all the time. So you have to be knowing that what is being said so you can fight, you know, you can push back.
And it's in sales and marketing in general, if, you know, particularly for earlier stage companies, they're so focused on what they, you know, what their message is and what their value proposition is, they forget, you know, that they have, there are other alternatives. They might be the big incumbents. There's other startups they have to compete with. And if you don't really know how they're depositioning you, you can go through a whole cycle and come up empty at the end because they've laid the traps. They've set the criteria. And if you don't know enough about your competition to understand when you're walking into a trap, then you're sure as heck not going to be in a position to be laying traps. And the best way of preventing a trap being laid is say, my opponent or my competitor is going to say this about me.
Right, the inoculation technique.
And there's such a lack of courage in a sales force. Usually that's due to a lack of knowledge of the competition. If you know what the competition is going to say, you should say, my opponent's going to say this, and it's not that way because of this, and here's what you should be looking at. Because we're, you know, that's the type of thing you need to be focused on and have the playbooks built out. So I know if I'm dealing with this competitor, this is the criteria they're going to be trying to help the prospect bake into their process. If you're explaining based on what your competitor said, you're losing.
And that's a big saying in politics. And here's
what's a big saying?
If you're explaining, you're losing. And that's a big thing we say
all the
time.
You're on your heels. You're playing defense.
And what's interesting, too, is 2 points Mark makes. He talks about you got to know your product inside and out because you got to be able to inoculate and go after it. There's a next layer of knowing the product. You got to believe in the product and be able to deliver a belief of that product with sincerity and passion.
Conviction, yeah. And you're not going to get that conviction if you don't really know what your competitor and is and or what the as-is environment is for, you know, whoever you're selling to and or running against and his
I was actually going to ask an even more basic question about that. You know, in politics, it seems like if you work on a campaign, you have to believe in that candidate and that mission. In companies, we talk about employees believing in the startup's mission, which is why they work there. How does that play out for like the sales force? Do you need a sales force that's totally bought into the mission? Or do you actually want someone who has a bit of healthy skepticism? Like, I don't believe this. Like, how does that nuance play out there?
The conviction is huge. If there's any doubt, I don't know how many sales calls you've been on, but you know, people can see
they
and
can
feel
tell right
and
through.
Read in a face-to-face type situation or a presentation. And yeah, they got to believe. I totally believe that in any kind of human interaction, you're either selling or you're being sold. Hey, it's great to be healthily skeptical, but if you're going to go out to war for me in the field and I'm going to count on you to deliver, then you are, and you're skeptical, that's going to resonate in front of a customer.
But I also think to your question too, our fathers always say, don't believe your own bullshit. You can be skeptical and you can be smart. And
I think that's good because
you can be self-critical
right?
And have a good, healthy self-evaluation. That's not the same thing we're talking about here, though. You can do that and at the same time believe in your product. Nothing has gotten it was out without flaws, whether it's your product or your candidate or whatever it might be. But
well,
you got to believe in it. You got to sell it.
You know, a good example, I may have a product that I'm going to market with that, you know, I don't have the users, right? Or maybe there's competition that does better down with the feature function, you know, for the developer or for, you know, the individual employee. But that competition doesn't have the scalability or the architecture to be used across a you know, Fortune 500, Global 2000 company. I have 2/3 of the equation. The competition has 1/3. Well, I mean, you know, I'm going to focus my time going top down in that situation. And yeah, I'm going to be skeptical. I'm going to do that internally and I'm going to beat the heck out of engineering to make sure we build out that type of functionality. I have no issue having courage and conviction and going to market and sitting across the table from a manager or VP or even a, you know, the user of my potential product and making sure we win that deal.
another important parallel too is the feedback on the ground that, for example, the sales team is giving to engineering on business side to improve the product.
Oh, gosh, well, Lars talks about this all the time.
That's happening in politics all the time. I mean, you're polling and you're doing focus groups, but there has to be feedback coming up to the strategy team and the candidate to give them a real ground testing of like what's really going on out there. And that's why the more eyes and ears you have out there, and that's what you have in your field team and your volunteers.
In the technology world, put yourself in the buyer's shoes. And in Todd's world, put yourself in the voter's shoes. What are they asking themselves? I think on the sales and marketing side, there's not enough of that goes on. Mm-hmm. What is their criteria? So they ask themselves three questions. Why should I care, or why should I do anything? If you can get past that, you know, you get some interest, piqued interest. And then, you know, they're going to ask themselves, all right, why you versus someone else? The third one is why now? The why you over a competitor is one of the competitors is do nothing different than what I'm doing versus, you know, I could also, you know, buy from a big incumbent. I could buy from another startup, or I could just do nothing. I haven't motivated them enough because of a feature, functionality, or scale. It's more typically more technically related. The why now is typically something that, right, this is the best place I can invest my not only capital and money, but also time and management and people and process to, you know, making something happen inside my company. And I think those three questions probably, you know, putting yourself in the voter's shoes, you know, I think candidates asking themselves, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So how would you answer that from the political view?
Well, what I would say simply is that if I'm Hillary Clinton or I'm Donald Trump, I'm their strategy team on either side, I would take the three questions that Mark just asked and make sure I'm asking myself those questions and what are the answers that we want them to be. And I think that you can pretty much define this presidential race on those three questions, and who answers them correctly or the right way in voters' minds is going to be the one that wins. So that's the way I describe it.
Okay, so just to wrap up, the movement is a message. If you're explaining, you're losing. And it sounds like the story is the strategy. And there's a lot of parallels, clearly, between politics and business. Thank you, Todd and Mark Cranny.
Thank you.